Welcome. This is Stan Lee of Marvel Comics warning you to look around you. Your classmates, your friends, you never know which one of them may be a mutant. A person born with strange and wondrous powers.
No place to hide. No place to run. No place to run. The mutant age. The mutant age has now begun.
Welcome to the Square Peg Show, Season 2, Episode 5, on June 15th, 2011. I'm Mike.
I'm Jesse.
I'm David.
This time, we'll have quick reviews of Bridesmaids and The Hangover Part 2, as well as group reviews of X-Men First Class and Super 8. Also, a preview of July's movies. We also have a phone number set up, 1-762-233-PEGS. That's 1-762-233-7347. The purpose of this phone number is to just offer your thoughts on any movie that you've seen or any part of the podcast that you enjoy or don't like. We would love to play it. We can just play it on voicemail. We can set it up. If you mess up while you're recording the voicemail, just let us know. Record again. We want to hear your voice on the show. So
please
preferably
call us.
It'd be sexy. Sexy naked voices.
Yes.
So that's our big feature. We really want the listeners to get started on that. As far as getting the show started, do you guys want to talk about last weekend's box office? Or
yes, hit us.
Yes. All right. Super 8 was at number one. X-Men First Class was at number two. Now, keep in mind, that was the second week of X-Men First Class. Mm. For number three, Kung Fu Panda 2. For number four, The Hangover Part 2. And for number five, Bridesmaids. Bridesmaids has been on the list ever since we did last podcast with Thor.
Yeah.
So Bridesmaids has a lot of staying power.
You know, I'm going to give Bridesmaids a special award for being the only movie that's in the top five that doesn't also have a number in its title, because I honestly just got really confused. Number one had eight, number two had a one, number three had a two.
Super one through seven. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Speaking of the eighth movie, the big thing would be the Harry Potter part eight.
Yeah.
Seven and a half.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. And, you know, I'm waiting to read the books with my kid when she's old enough.
Yeah.
So I haven't even read the first book and the last movie's coming out. So I've been trying like hell to avoid anything to do with the story. But
wow, that's dedication. I personally think if the kid's old enough to breathe, it's probably a muggle and they should just read the damn book.
That's I have awesome. A feeling it's going to be really good, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah. Are you guys pumped up for the last Harry Potter? Or?
Honestly, I haven't even caught up with the ones that are out yet. I mean, I don't want to diss Harry Potter, but I haven't read the book, so you know that's why I'm not as wrapped up into it as most people are.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, the first couple movies, it was struggling to get through, and then the third one hit, which was a phenomenal film. I mean, just by itself, and not even knowing much of the background. But then I had to deal with a couple more after, and it was just like, oh my God, come on, please. But from what I understand, like the later stuff is much, much better, and I'm just, you know, I got to get to that.
Yeah, the series grows up with the audience that initially started reading it, so mm-hmm. it's a great series for anyone actually growing up. So, you know, holding off for your daughter, Mike, is a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to the seventh book, I mean, you're a teenager, you're pissed, you hate your parents, and you're confused about your sexuality, and there's this movie. and there you go.
That's pretty great, though. I hadn't really thought about how much Harry and the other characters must be aging throughout the whole thing. So
yeah, unlike Twilight, where they don't age and they're 90 and still in high school.
I'm sad that you know that.
Yeah. All right, so that was a very quick look at the box office. It's kind of hard to judge what's a hit. Like, I think some of these will grow a lot. As far as X-Men First Class, it had kind of an anemic opening. We'll see if it grows a little bit, and Super 8, I don't really know what the expectations were for that, so we'll have to find out. But
So you're saying that X-Men was anemic, as in it lacked iron, or perhaps adamantium?
maybe. But we'll get into that a little bit later in the show. But Dave has seen Hangover Part 2, and I've seen Bridesmaids. We should quickly review those before we move on to what's coming in July.
Yeah.
Can I give my 30-second reiteration of Hangover 2?
Sure.
Yes.
Hangover 2, more of Hangover 1. Done. It really was a good movie, but it really was not trying to do anything more than it already done, which I kind of liked because I'm a fan of sequels not trying to outdo the original, because usually that approach lacks a little bit. But I think they had a pretty good formula for this movie because they'd already done it once and they said, let's just do it again. For instance, with the first one, one character lost a tooth, and in this one, he gains a tattoo. So they kind of did the whole like permanent loss, permanent gain. Yeah. So they play with the same formula, just switching it up minorly. And for anyone that liked the first one, you'll like the second one. You may not walk out thinking, holy crap, best movie ever, but you might get a good laugh. Well, that's and actually, you might be scarred for life.
That's actually the way it was presented to me. They're like, I still haven't seen the first one, but it's coming up on my alphabetical list. But that's how it was presented to me. It was like, if you liked Hangover 1, it's just like more of the same, but that's not a bad thing because the Hangover 1 was apparently great. So yeah, that's the way it was kind of presented to me.
And again, you're sitting there waiting. The only thing I would say that's different is about the waiting part. You're actually looking forward to the credits this time. If you saw The Hangover 1, you know that the credits had a bunch of photos from the night that they couldn't remember. Mm-hmm. And this one does the same thing. So you kind of know that they're going to do it again because the movie's pretty much the same. And those photos are just as outrageous as the first time. So
awesome.
Again, scarred for life, but the same kind of scars last time. It's a reopening of a wound that you like.
Oh, so many mixed messages in that review. I'm trying to figure out if you liked that it followed the same formula, because you said that you don't like it when a sequel tries to outdo itself. But I don't know, is it like comfort food or what? Like,
I'm gonna, it's, yeah, comfort food's a great way of putting that. Hangover 2, comfort food. It's the hair of the dog. That's what it is. I mean, this is the movie that you watch after Hangover 1 because you can't put up with life after Hangover 1, so you need it again.
I'm just thinking of the sequels that follow the same beats throughout the whole thing. Hey, remember how this is kind of like the last time? And then, they just keep doing that. But
yeah.
Seriously, I think that line was said 3 times in the movie.
As far as Bridesmaids go, we talked about this last podcast in terms of it sounding by the title as if it was, a type of romantic comedy that only females would really, that you drag your husband or your boyfriend to it.
Right.
This is written by Christine Wigg from Saturday Night Live and Amy Mumolo, whose name I really like to say. And
say it again.
Amy Mumolo.
Delicious.
Mumolo.
And, I can't say that there was any point in the movie where it seemed like, oh, they're appealing to women during this. I thought, I think they were just appealing to people that like funny movies. Mm. So I don't think it was for specifically women or for specifically men, although you could say it followed a lot of the stuff that, women enjoy, but it also had fart and dick jokes throughout it. So you could say maybe there wouldn't be as many fart and dick jokes if they were trying to do something different, but...
Was it equally balanced with like boob and vaginal jokes or what?
I think there were more dick jokes than boob jokes, but I don't know.
Dicks are funnier, I'll give you that.
Yeah,
pretty funny looking.
And goofy.
Yep.
Wow.
And it gets raunchy. Like, there were some people whose delicate sensibilities were offended in the theater. I gotta say, if you are kind of turned off by a woman shitting into a sink, you might want to close your eyes during the gastrointestinal hijinks.
Oh, man. What we need is a gross-off between Bridesmaids and Hangover 2 so that the sequel to Hangover 2, which would be Hangover 3, and the sequel to Bridesmaids, which would be Bridesmaids 2, would actually be a versus movie. So the brides are getting married, and they have hangovers with these guys. And that's the whole title. The Bridesmaids gets married and have hangover these guys. Because, why not?
Wow. Yeah.
One more.
Be like a hangmaids or like bride overs?
Bride over.
Dude, bride over. That sounds like the next Nick Cage movie.
But... yes.
All right. One more thought about Bridesmaids was that, even though it had the raunchy, disgusting stuff, there was a scene in the credits where, like, I had to wash my retinas when I was done. that it also had, like, that kind of, like, tenderness to it, I thought. Like, the story of, this friendship between the two women that were the stars, Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig. So I was enjoying that. But, yeah. Okay. So those are the two quick reviews. I guess we're ready to move on to some of the ones coming out in July.
Right on.
Okay. Oh, first of all, there's this one in June that just sounded terrible. I want to see if you guys have seen the trailer for it yet. Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, Jesus.
What? Come on.
Jim Carrey, what is wrong with you?
Come on, March the Penguins. No. It's March the Penguins.
It is not
which
March
had
the Penguins.
Friedman, and then Morgan Freeman and Jim Carrey were in Bruce Almighty, and now Bruce Almighty has the Penguins.
No, it is not March of the Penguins. March of the Penguins was awesome. This is not. This is CGI penguins with personalities, and it's doo-doo. It's like, here comes Jim Carrey running down the Eddie Murphy trail, the way I see it.
Ew. Is that the trail Eddie Murphy left with, like, slime and goo behind himself?
And bad movies, yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
The entire plot of the movie seems to be, based on the trailer, is that Jim Carrey's character is a shitty person. Some penguins come by, and they spend the whole movie in the apartment, like, just doing a bunch of wacky stuff.
Yeah.
So it's the Smurfs with penguins.
I guess so. They're not doing anything.
It's like
other
Liar
than...
Liar with penguins.
It's like Jim Carrey's career with penguins.
But not as funny.
Coming up in July, Horrible Bosses, starring Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, as these three guys that have horrible bosses, including Kevin Spacey, Colin Farrell, who's sporting like he's balding and
comb over.
Yeah, and a pot belly. So you've seen that advertisement for it?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Aniston as a sex-obsessed dentist.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's no problem with that one.
Nothing at all. No, that one actually looks really, really good. And honestly, every time I see the character that Colin Farrell is playing, I always think of Tom Cruise's character from Tropic Thunder is the way I see it. And it's like, it just looks hilarious. I mean, and anything with Kevin Spacey is pretty awesome. But that's a nice group of guys. I mean, especially Charlie Day. I'm a big fan of him. I'm a big fan of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So, I'm going to be all about that one.
Yeah, I was enjoying it. Jason Bateman has that movie, and then he has another one called The Change Up, where he switches bottles. He switches bodies with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, no.
I know. I can't believe how many movies he's making. I'm always saying, Ryan Reynolds is coming up in the next movie.
But he's using the quantity over quality method, clearly.
Yeah, definitely.
Body swapping movies are hardly ever any good.
It's just everyone will say, if they've seen Freaky Friday, well, that's like Freaky Friday. But if you saw another one that was a body swap movie, you'll say, oh, it's that movie again. So it's formula, but I mean, come on. So is Horrible Bosses. I mean, doesn't everyone have one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
But just, you know what? Now that you bring up Freaky Friday, I got to say this because I worked in a movie theater for a long time, and this is one of the stupidest like marketing things I've ever seen. Most movies come out on a Friday, right? Every once in a while, they'll come out on Wednesday. But for why Freaky Friday came out on a Wednesday, I'll never know. I'll never understand why they ever chose to do that. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And it drove me kind of crazy. But anyway, beside the point, go.
Zookeeper starring Kevin James, where a bunch of talking animals in a zoo try to hook Kevin James up with some woman.
Yeah, didn't they make that? I think it was called Hitch, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Except for instead of Will Smith, we have a gorilla and a lion. Yeah.
No, Kevin James is not a gorilla.
No, I mean, I'm saying
he's a real man.
He's gonna have to get hooked up by a gorilla with a gorilla for this to be any. No, you know what? That's not.
Yeah, but look, that gorilla loves some TGI Fridays.
I guess so.
And I'm gonna want to see that movie probably just because it looked like it was making fun of itself. Wow. And with Hitch, it was trying to be a little serious. But with Zookeeper, it looks like it knows it's being dumb. I mean, it's got Sylvester Stallone and Adam Sandler doing voices. It's not really trying too hard, I think. And I'll be okay because it's not trying too hard.
It looked more like it was making fun of me, and I don't like that. So fuck that movie.
Oh. Wow. Jesse watches Zookeeper. The movie. Okay, anyway. Winnie the Pooh on July 15th. I was mocked a lot in the season premiere over this. I am so stoked over Winnie the Pooh. So be it.
So be it.
Well, it's not like you're the only one.
I am not the only one. And it's
classic. You're the only one out of us three, but yeah.
Yes. Well, it's classic A.A. Milne or whatever his name is, the guy that wrote the Winnie the Pooh stuff that's supposed to go back to the roots, and I'm a Pooh purist. And I need the original Pooh, not all the new repackaged Pooh.
Fresh Pooh. Oh, Lordy. Fresh classic Pooh.
This is why you come to the podcast, people. Yeah, this is what you're waiting for.
Only here on Squid Fake Show.
Were you guys talking about something else?
Pooh, no. I think.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I said.
Cowboys and Aliens on July 29th. This is starring Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Sam Rockwell, Olivia Wilde, Clancy Brown, Keith Carradine, directed by Jon Favreau. adapted from a comic book, written by some pretty good screenwriters. I won't go into all that. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the trailer yet?
I have, and I've enjoyed the hell of it. I just keep watching it, hoping it's just going to keep going and show me the rest of the movie. But and yeah. It does. But holy crap, that looks amazing. Holy crap, that looks amazing.
I think the cinematography for, like, you know, the Western scenes looks great. The mood looks really cool. I don't know. It didn't seem as tense. It was just like a bunch of UFOs so far. Mm-hmm. I'm sure once you actually see the movie, it'll get more into the sci-fi aspect of it.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely piqued my interest, you know. But
it's about as close to, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's, you know, for the steampunk purists out there, that it's really steampunky, but it's kind of close for me. Like, you know, the mixture of those two in particular, it always brings me back to something like Briscoe County Jr., which, you know, it mixed that sci-fi with Western, and it just somehow works really well. And there's a nude Olivia Wilde looking at me on the screen, so I can't really complain with any of that at all.
The trailer very much wanted to emphasize, hey, she's naked.
Yeah, and I was like, thumbs up, trailer. You're my friend now.
And for all those people that were really into Firefly, I mean, it was a Western sci-fi, and here it is again, except now it's got Daniel Craig and a very – I don't know if he's brother or cousin of David Carradine, but it's got a Carradine in there. Mm-hmm. So we got the dynasty continuing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because what's the name of the fellow that killed himself?
David Carradine?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I did mix up those. Yeah. In my head, at least. And that's an interesting point. As far as Briscoe County Jr. and Firefly, they're both sci-fi Western, but they couldn't be, you know, more different.
Right. No, yeah. One definitely has more of one than the other. But it's just, it's kind of like the different sides of the same coin kind of thing. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just and the other thing is, I mean, the premise is awesome. I mean, you got a guy that just kind of wakes up in the middle of nowhere with this insane thing on his arm. He has no idea who he is. So just those kinds of movies anyway. I mean, just from a trailer, I can tell it's got a great premise and it's got some decent, you know, suspense and that kind of stuff even mixed up in it. So, oh, man, I'm excited about this. And I like Daniel Craig anyway, so.
Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis,
Mila, I think.
Star in Friends with Benefits, which I think Dave already reviewed so far. I think it was called No Strings Attached then.
Yeah. But,
yeah. So they'll be doing that one.
It's called My Life as I Write It.
And Crazy Stupid Love, which is a romantic comedy or maybe just some sort of drama type thing with Steve Carell. And I don't know much about it yet, other than it's getting a lot of buzz. It's being a, you know, really good character piece for Steve Carell.
I hope it's going to be better than the last Steve Carell movie, because I walked out of that.
Which one?
Yes.
What was it? Was Dinner for Schmucks?
Dinner with Schmucks.
Okay.
Dinner with Wasting My Theater Money.
I totally walked out of that movie. It was so fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's supposed to be super good, so we'll see if it really is. But okay, that was a very quick... Well, go ahead.
There's a few more things I'd like to mention, just in brief about July. Going back to what Jesse was saying about Freaky Friday not being released on a Friday, I'm really surprised that Captain America: The First Avenger is not coming out on July 4th. It's coming out on July 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have it on Independence Day? I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But marketing, that's coming out. And
marketing.
Yeah.
There's two movies coming out from Fox Searchlight, which I'm quickly coming to identify with just any other indie movie, because pretty much that's all they put out. Snowflower and The Secret Fan, which is going to have a very close-knit girl kind of movie, sisters trying to deal with their life in 19th century China with you know, a guest walk-on by Wolverine. That's, you know, he's apparently everywhere.
Yeah.
And then in another,
and he's not really joking. He's not really joking this time, because Hugh Jackman apparently is in it.
So, awesome.
Yeah.
Claws and everything. Smoking a cigar. And also, they're coming. Fox Searchlight is releasing on July 22nd Another Earth. Not literally releasing Another Earth, but a movie called Another Earth.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that, and that looks amazing.
Yeah. A woman hits a young woman, minor, hits another car with hers and kills everyone in that family except for the husband. She goes to jail for 4 years, comes out and tries to find the man to apologize, and winds up working for him and then falling in love with him and can't tell what's going on. And then the reason she originally hits that family in her vehicle is that she saw a planet out the window of her car, and it turns out that is Earth 2. So there's another Earth out there. parallel to our Earth.
Oh, sweet.
And there's a contest to get permission to be flown over to that Earth. So she really wants to win this contest to go over there and see what life would have been like had she not hit this person's car.
Yeah, it looks really good. It definitely has that kind of indie feel to it, but it also has that kind of, like Dave was talking about, like the Fox Searchlight or the Focus Films kind of feel to it. It's definitely dramatic, but it's I don't know, it's kind of artsy, but it looks really good.
Yeah, it says it was highly praised at the Sundance Film Festival, so it's got the indie cred and it's sci-fi, and that's a pretty good matchup for me. And I totally overlooked that. That's great.
Yeah. Did you guys happen to see the trailer for a movie called Real Steel, also with Hugh Jackman?
Yes.
I've been waiting on that for freaking months.
Can we just say that this is Rock'em Sock'em Robots the movie? Can we call it that? Because that is what it is. Oh my God, it's just giant robots boxing. And while I'm looking at it and I'm going, this is dumb. I keep thinking, I used to play that game, and that shit was fun, so why not have a movie on it?
I thought the robots looked awesome in the movie. I thought the CG looked cool.
Yeah.
The problem was, as the trailer went on, I realized that the robots are not going to turn evil. It's really just going to be this like father-son relationship the whole time, and the robots are in the background.
Yeah.
What a missed opportunity.
It's like what Over the Top would have been if like the prize semi came to life and like killed people. So, yeah.
Oh, well, Wolverine's in it, so I'm happy.
Holy crap.
As long as he has to fight the robot with his claws at the end, I'm all right.
Yeah, all about it.
All right. And now we'll do a lightning round movie news section. So we'll have more time for the big reviews at the end of the show. All right, here we go. J.J. Abrams has said that he is pushing back the Star Trek sequel from June 2012 to sometime holiday 2012. And it might not even be ready then, but now that he's done with Super 8, he's devoted to Star Trek 2. Thoughts?
Is it the Wrath of Khan?
I don't know.
Then fuck it.
Hey, at least it's not a sequel to Super 8. Super 9 would be bad.
Yeah, it would.
Did you guys ever see the first one?
Yes.
Super 1?
No. Star Trek.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was amazing.
Reboot. Yeah, I thought it was good. It was a... I don't want to get too far into it, but it definitely kind of just took a... When we're talking about a reboot, this is a straight-up reboot. Like the whole fucking universe is different. So, yeah, no, I was a fan.
Okay. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which just last episode, Jesse told Hollywood, relaunch it.
That's right. They're listening.
So it'll have a computer graphic animated television series on Nickelodeon, which I feel like they've done that before. I'm not sure. And... a live action. Well, no, it doesn't even say live action. It says a big screen reboot. Viacom has the rights now. Mm-hmm. They think it could be as big as Transformers.
Wow.
That's just the studio saying that. Are you guys?
I mean, that's ballsy.
Yeah. Are you interested in that?
I've seen every other. Unfortunately, I've seen every other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, and I'll probably see this one too, just for the nostalgia sake. So yeah, probably.
I'll look at it.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, did you see the CG one from 2007?
I did, and I was actually a fan of that one. I mean, coming off of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 3, which was a travesty, that was actually really cool. And I got to say that as much as I like the live-action suits, the CGI really lent itself to the kind of movements that the Turtles would actually do and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I was actually a big fan of that one.
Yeah, I think I would watch it, but I'm not sure if I'm really looking forward to it. If it comes out, of course, I'll see it, but I don't really see what they can do with it that would really cause a renewed interest in that particular franchise. As sad as it is to say, I don't see it going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of like excitement for it, no, but I'll check it out if I definitely get a chance to. So.
And speaking of the rights being picked back up at something, that would be Warren Beatty picking up winning a lawsuit so he can continue to have the rights to Dick Tracy. He says he wants to make a sequel to Dick Tracy now.
Wow.
Yeah. And the odd thing is that he doesn't want to give up the rights. He doesn't want to let other people use the franchise at all, which apparently people still think you could make money off of the Dick Tracy franchise. I'm not sure about that. But that he would just appear as Dick Tracy dressed up on like a TV channel just so that he could. Isn't that weird? Like, just so that he could keep on having these rights so no one else could use Dick Tracy.
Hey, do what you like. But you know what? I would actually watch a Dick Tracy movie if it came out. I'd be more excited than a Turtles movie.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about the original is that it had this comic-y noir kind of thing, which, we don't really get a lot of that honestly, in film, other than like Sin City, maybe, and the what was the other one, The Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. It's these old properties that no one. I mean, you ask a kid nowadays who Dick Tracy is, and they're just thinking they're you know you're calling him a name. So, I mean, you know, we got stuff like The Spirit. Who the fuck knows what that is? And you know, like the Phantom. No one knows what that shit is. So you know, what's really the point, man? Warren Beatty, what are you doing, dude?
He's 74 years old as well. I mean, let's give it up.
Prune Tracy.
And if they had the movie come out and it was called Old Dick, come on, money.
Oh, man, that was a Simpsons reference, right?
Yep.
Oh, it all came back to me. Okay. What were you saying, Dave?
And with the movie possibility out there, we have to parallel that with that game L.A. Noir that just came out recently. And that's set in a very similar era with that same kind of like noir gab 20s feel.
Yeah.
And that game has really picked up a lot of interest.
Oh,
and it might quite possibly cause a small return to that era in cinematography and moviedom. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a Dick Tracy movie in the next 2 years.
I got to say, I really, really hope so. And to geek out on games for just a second. Number one, that game looks amazing because they use a lot of facial tracking in all the cutscenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it from what I understand, it plays like a movie, like a you know 20s mystery movie. So much so that someone I'm not 100% on the authenticity of this.
Words.
Authenticity of this, but someone said that it was the only game that's ever been nominated for like some kind of film award because it plays so much like a film.
Yep, I'll second that. I think I'm the first person that said that to you, but I'll second it.
Yeah, and the only other thing is that. You know, nowadays when we're talking about like DVDs that we're playing games off of, you guys remember back in the PlayStation days where, you know, some games took up three discs. Mm-hmm. Disc takes up three discs for like the modern stuff. And we can hold so much more on these new discs now than we did the old stuff. So this is a huge, huge, huge game. And I really think that it'll take, you know, culture kind of back into that era to, you know, start messing around with that. And hopefully we'll get to see that in some film. That'd be great.
And hopefully we'll hear Jesse's video game podcast that's in the works, because I would be listening to that.
Yeah, I'm sooner or later. Here we go.
I'm serious, man. I would totally be a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Gosh, okay. Two other stories I just want to hit on real quick, and we can move on. One of them is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, you may have heard he had some troubles. This or that. I don't know.
There's a blues song about to happen. He got troubles. Too many women on his mind.
And the lamentations.
We're not going to go into, like, you know, personal lives and moral judgments and all this stuff. But we will go into his film career. He had just gotten out of the governorship and was ready to make sequels to Kindergarten Cop, True Lies, and the fourth and fifth Terminator movie.
Oh, God. Oh, why?
He was... Well, they had an interesting continuity for that. I think, well, you know what? I'm not really well-versed in the mythology of Terminator. I think Salvation did something a little bit different than Terminator 3, and they were going to pick back up on one of the plot threads.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I couldn't say as far as where the story was meant to continue in Terminator 4, which is what they were calling it.
Yeah. Mm. Did Mike, did you see Salvation?
No.
They actually had this great little area in it where they pretty much CGI'd a big Arnold in the film, but like Arnold from back in the 80s, you know, like the first Terminator. Mm-hmm. And that whole section was really, really amazing. So I don't know, for Arnold to come back and do something, I'd like to see it, but don't give him like creative rights to it because exactly.
Yep. I think in the mythology of the creator of the T-1000s, or the T-models, were supposedly based on a couple of different humans, and one of them was based on a scientist that was Schwarzenegger's body type or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him being playing some sort of human slave, like in the system, making it whatever. But I'm more interested in his other movie possibilities because... Yeah.
I'm more interested in the Kindergarten Cop mythology, you know? What does it mean?
I was going along the same lines with you. I was actually going to go back to his earlier movies. The first movie he ever made, which was not Hercules in New York, incidentally, it was an adult film. And with his current success with the ladies coming to fruition, I think now would be a great time for, you know, the Governator to relaunch his career in the only way that California seems to know how to do it.
Porno! Oh, Here's the hoping. Oh, geez. Dude. I was gonna say Running Man, but I'm behind you 100% on this now.
Pumping Man.
Dude, that's great that you look at this whole scandal and you're like, Arnold has success with the ladies. Yep.
Schwarzenegger and Ron Jeremy could make a very ugly duo.
Oh my god, dude, they could remake Twins.
Oh. Oh, please move on to the next topic.
Next topic, please.
Well, just one more thing about that. Before the scandal, he had plans with Stan Lee to do an animated series called The Governator.
Oh, my God, really?
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, Stan Lee has huge hits nowadays, like Stripperella with Pam Anderson. And, you know, you never heard of Stripperella?
No, I did, unfortunately. Yeah. I did.
These are the kind of ideas Stan Lee comes up with nowadays. But with, you know... What's funny is that back when people started calling him the Governator, somebody that worked for him decided to trademark that, and they were going to make this big thing where he was a superhero. And at the end of the interview, it said something like, "But I haven't told Maria that that she'll be in the cartoon yet." And and now I'm like, "Well, you didn't tell Maria a lot of things."
Yeah, really.
But anyway. We'll see how his film career goes. He might have to star in The Beaver Part 2 or something.
Oh, no.
With, That's part of the restitution, man.
The Beavernator.
Oh, yeah. Sam Raimi is going to direct an Oz prequel with James Franco and Zach Braff and Mila Kunis.
Wait, an Oz prequel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oz, as in Wizard of Oz. It's called Oz the Great and Powerful.
So a prequel?
I thought we were talking about like Schillinger and like ass rape and
yeah, HBO Oz TV series, but no. Is it a reboot or a prequel?
It says prequel.
But the prequel to her going to the Land of Oz was the Dust Bowl and misery and farming. I don't want to watch that. It's a great show.
Maybe it's not Dorothy related though. Maybe it's all set in Oz. So I don't know. Huh.
I would hope so, because if we're just hanging out in Kansas all for 2 hours, I could pass on that, I think.
Well, yeah. As long as Zach Braff is the Scarecrow, I'm pretty much see him do that in every book, so I'm okay with that.
But then it's Sam Raimi, which, you know, Sam Raimi's kind of hit and miss for me nowadays, so I don't know. I'll watch it. Shit.
As long as that movie has Wolverine in it, it'll succeed.
He'll show up somewhere.
After a lot... go ahead.
No, I was going to say, he'd be the cowardly Wolverine that shows up and wants some courage. and you know, liquor.
Well, and Hugh Jackman, really the news, he's actually going to be the lead character in the upcoming rendition of Les Miserables. He's going to be Jean Valjean. The last time that movie was done successfully, it had Liam Neeson as Jean Valjean.
Well, that's why. It's Liam fucking Neeson. Come on.
And, yeah, he's coming back to reprise one of his roles in a movie I will not be naming for spoiler alert sake.
Well, he was confirmed to be on the set, so we don't know what that means. But yes.
So I see.
Yeah, we'll let you go. And you know, you'll have to get your movie tickets now, because on December 14th, 2012, and December 13th, 2013, The Hobbit Part 1, The Hobbit Part 2. And it's directed by Peter Jackson.
Cool.
And it has all of the big stars returning. Ian McKellen, Martin Freeman as Bilbo Baggins, Kate Blanchett, Orlando Bloom, Christopher Lee, Hugo Weaving, Elijah Wood. They're all coming back, right?
Wow.
As far as I can tell. And, you know, this was in development hell for a while, especially when MGM went under. You know, the James Bond franchise stalled when MGM had bankruptcy problems.
Right.
The Hobbit movie stalled. Everybody's on board now. I think this is pretty big news for the Lord of the Rings fans.
Do you know if guaranteed money? That's why they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know if Ian Holm is going to come back at all? I mean, for any other role?
Which character did he play?
He was Bilbo in the originals.
Oh, okay. Well then, no, I don't see his name listed.
Okay.
Huh.
I imagine Sean Bean's not on there.
No, I don't see Sean Astin on here at all. And that's funny. I didn't realize that was not Bilbo last time. But.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a prequel to the Lord of the Rings series, and he was much older. They got him because he was old, but, you know.
So story reasons.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
I'm in. Dude, ever since they finished the Lord of the Rings, they've been talking about Peter Jackson going back and doing The Hobbit, which I'll watch that shit with quickness. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did amazing work on Lord of the Rings, and I'd love to see it, especially a giant fucking dragon. I'm okay with that. That's good in my book.
All right, last news story. Hasbro has been making it big with G.I. Joe franchise and Transformers franchise, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're branching out to the next phase, the next craze would be board games, board game movies.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
There will be a Battleship movie.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
They're remaking Clue.
Okay. Really? But that actually has a storyline. Battleship doesn't have a storyline.
Battleship,
you sank
like,
it, game over.
Yeah, blow shit up. But I feel kind of iffy about this Clue thing. I was a huge fan of the original because it had just an amazing cast and, you know, Tim Curry. So, Oh, man, that's ballsy. That's really ballsy.
And Battleship is directed by Peter Berg, who is a director I trust. So I'm thinking even though it's preposterous to do a Battleship movie, that it might be okay. Risk.
The Risk game?
Yeah.
I'm not watching that. If it's as long as the games are, pass.
There's like 3 hours of opening credits.
Candyland.
You're shitting me with this.
That sounds like a bad porn.
What's funnier is the way that the screenwriters describe Candyland. Lord of the Rings, but with candy.
I'm in. I take it back. That sounds amazing.
Which just makes me think of some 5-year-old after they finish their Candyland game, go to see a Lord of the Rings style movie.
See, I was really hoping that you would say Lord of the Rings for the, you know, the Monopoly thing, because, you know, you shall not pass, go. You shall not pass, like, $200.
Parker Brothers, man.
Fuck Parker Brothers.
I just want to see two people fighting with gigantic candy canes.
Ouija.
Really?
Ouija?
Yeah, I always said Ouija board. I mean, that's the way I've always said it, but then I looked at the spelling, and I was like, is that really how it's said?
Well, that's a fucked up word anyway, so.
Yeah. Just like, how the fuck do you do a Ouija movie? Is it going to be like Paranormal Activity or something?
Wait, they did a Ouija movie. It was called Witchcraft, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're right. There is a Monopoly one. I guess, maybe, I don't know who's in charge of that one, but Monopoly is a movie in the works.
At least that has a character.
Yeah. And to cap it all off, there has been talks for a long time now of putting all the rest of the toys in their own movie. So that means Cabbage Patch Kids, My Little Pony, Zoids, Mr. Potato Head, Stretch Armstrong.
So it's it's Toy Story, but the board game version. Yeah. And Mr. Potato Head was already in that, so they're going to have to get rights. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out.
Oh, it's just so funny. First they're doing the fairy tale craze, now the board game craze.
Oh, my Lord.
They're going to remake everything.
Wow.
This is depressing.
As long as there's no like treasure troll movie with like Bob Hoskins as a treasure troll or something.
Oh, wow. I might actually watch that.
All right, you guys ready for the reviews?
I'm ready for anything other than board game movies, yes.
Sorry, man. Okay. And now it's time to move on to reviews, and we're pretty excited about this one. I don't know what you guys think about it yet, but it's X-Men First Class. And just to run down the plot real quick, it's about two guys, Xavier and Magneto, and how they both approach the discovery of the mutant gene and how people are born with superpowers or deformities. And Magneto is trying to hunt down someone that killed her mom. Xavier is trying to discover what the government knows about things, how many mutants are out there. Their storylines intertwine, and we're introduced to the first X-Men team, according to this movie or the X-Men movies or something like that. Because I've heard the word pre-boot used, where you get to mix up a reboot and a prequel all together.
Right.
So,
they're just making this shit up.
So, along the way, there are references to JFK and Cuban Missile Crisis and other political stuff. And the big bad guy is Sebastian Shaw, played by Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
So, listeners, the way we're going to do this is we're going to go into we're not going to talk about their nerdy stuff yet, the continuity stuff yet. We're going to just do a straight review, and we won't really spoil anything. If you guys are interested in seeing it, and then we'll do kind of a second review for it. So do you think that the average moviegoer could go into X-Men First Class without knowing much about X-Men, without knowing much about superhero comics, and enjoy it?
I do, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was – I thought especially it was written well. The characters were really, really interesting and even hilarious at times. Yeah, I think, as a matter of fact, I know a few people who have seen the movie, who's never even read a comic in their life, and they were just, they were a fan of it. I mean, it was just kind of fun and witty and, you know, fantastical all at the same time. So I think it had a really nice mix.
Okay. And you thought it was a good movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it. And as a matter of fact, I liked it better than the other ones. So
me too. I agree with that. Yeah.
How about you, Dave?
Yes. As far as the... Like, just speaking of X-Men movies, and even, let's just say superhero movies as far as it goes. Most of the superhero movies like to base what they do on either what they think the fans are going to like or what they think – let me say that again. What the comic book fans are going to like and then what the lay audience is going to like. Mm-hmm. And this one, rather than saying something like, oh, well, it tries to meet both, I think this one tried to do what would be best for the story.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And it worked because everyone could appreciate that this one didn't try to – sell itself to one particular audience. Instead, it just did what seemed to be within itself.
Yeah, I actually think that's kind of in and of itself in that, because it's you know, most superhero movies, there's always the word origin that pops up. You know, was the origin right? You know, was this an origin movie? The cool thing about X-Men in particular is that there's not a lot of origin. It's like people are just born this way. So they, you know, they can skip past all of the important story beats. Mm-hmm. And just kind of jump right into what these people can do and how other people view that and that sort of stuff. So I think it's able to gloss over any of that origin stuff and just jump right into good storytelling.
And I thought the filmmakers did a great job of realizing that, like David was saying, we're not beholden to the comic books. We're not beholden necessarily to the other X-Men movies.
Right.
We're interested in having good characters. You know, I was thinking of characters like Xavier or Mystique. Mm-hmm. There are so many different... They're kind of flawed, you know?
Yeah.
I like it when the heroes are flawed and the bad guys are sympathetic, and they did that really well.
Yeah.
You know, I have a few complaints about, to me, the first half was more interesting than the second half. To me, the music was kind of all up in your ear.
Yeah.
Like the swelling orchestra, I don't know if it ever stopped throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, any kind of problems I had with that, I look at almost any individual scene, I was like, that was a really enjoyable scene. I felt like I was right there with the character, you know?
Sure. Yeah. So. And even the whole spinning of the web of, you know, in the movie, Xavier and Mystique kind of grew up with each other and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, that's interesting stuff that, you know, I don't think even that's ever happened in the comics, and, you know, it's just kind of brand new. Mm-hmm. But it was just, to me, it was a lot of the witty humor that they kind of threw in there that I think the other X-Men movies tried for, but really were unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one, you know, we normally think as Charles Xavier as a very prim and proper kind of a character, where in this one he's young and he's kind of a little crazy and he has these pickup lines and, you know, that kind of stuff. Really,
right.
Really funny and witty, and I was just really, really enjoyed it.
Right. Best pickup lines ever.
Yeah. And that, and you know what, the acting was also amazing. Mike, if you can help me out with the guy that played Magneto.
Fassbender, Michael Fassbender. I think I say his name wrong because he's half Irish and half German.
Yeah, well, he was fucking amazing. Is
yes,
he was. He was so good in that role, and I got to say, he just blew me away. And even the guy that did Xavier was done well, mm-hmm. but Fassbender was amazing. And even Kevin Bacon, and I got to give it up. Because we actually had a comment on a prior episode where Dominique, I believe, told me to stop hating on the Bacon, and now I know why, because he was really, really good in this film. He sold that character to me really, really well.
And he kind of wanted to do the movie because of that whole German aspect or German accent aspect to it,
mm-hmm.
at the beginning, which was a really good performance, I thought, by Kevin Bacon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so mainstream audience, I think you would enjoy it, and also I think that if you are tired of seeing, I mean, if you're tired of seeing a superhero movie when there's just like one or two superpowered people, one cool thing about a team movie is you get to see how a big fight would take place with this person's superpower versus that person's superpower.
Right.
And I always love that kind of stuff. You know?
Absolutely.
So.
And I've been loving the audience reception. Like, if you just kind of glance through articles, like just throw up a Google search and see what pops up, we get everything from X-Men First Class is incredible fun to X-Men First Class, a political philosopher's summer blockbuster, to X-Men First Class reviewing Magneto and the Super Jews. So
Jews.
It's all over the place. So it's got a lot of variety, a lot of different access points, so anyone can walk in and watch it.
Really, and I think the other thing that helps the movie is that it's just the X-Men universe and the way Stan Lee created it. It's just a big social commentary as to, you know, racism and that sort of stuff. Whereas in other ones, it's nothing like that. I mean, Batman and Superman, Spider-Man, you don't really get that kind of stuff. This is like the whole universe is controversial. So, you know, let's see what happens.
They can do allegories like that with, like, inside other allegories. Like, for example, Mystique feels slighted even by other mutants because she is a mutant that has a very different appearance.
Right.
That makes me think of, like, a black gay person getting slighted by other black people or, mm-hmm. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, but definitely.
And while we're talking on the things that the movie does so well and the social commentary and everything, would you mind if I transitioned into a little bit of negative talk about it?
Sure.
Okay. While this movie is great for setting up a social commentary, it sets back the women rights movement, whether it's for humans or mutant women, like back like a bajillion millennia.
Does it?
Because every woman in that movie was there because she had boobs. That was it. Like, most of the heroes and most of the villainous, they had no acting skills. They're like, hey, we look pretty in this costume. I mean, I'm not going to say about everyone in there, but a large majority of them.
Yeah. And no, I can kind of see that.
One of the characters.
A large majority of who? The women?
The women, the female actresses, as opposed to the male actresses. But you know what I mean.
Sure.
So I don't know if anyone else noticed that. I didn't really find much quality female acting in the movie. Two particular actresses who I forget their names, the one that played Mystique and the one that played.
Emma Frost?
Not Emma Frost. She was one of the bad ones. Angel and Emma Frost were the worst in that movie. Yeah. And Moira McTaggart, why were they even there? Don't even know.
That's like the first thing she did is like, I'm going to take off all my clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Couple of different thoughts on that. One, totally agreed about January Jones, who played Emma Frost. To me, she was the only bad actor in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Emma Frost is supposed to be like, you know, kind of spicy, and she just so like cold. You know, I know that Emma Frost has also had that frozen demeanor, but that doesn't mean that you get to not act.
Right.
You have that straight face the whole time. Come on, you know?
I'm going to take a movie off.
So she, like, her agent came up to her and was like, hey, I've got this role. You don't have to do anything. I'm sold. Do it.
Yeah, I enjoy her on Mad Men, which also she plays a character where she has, like, this cold demeanor. But I guess that's what she goes for since she's not very good.
January is like a winter month, so I guess she has this theme going, but you know, she needs to branch out.
I also agree with the Maury McTaggart's first scene. She strips down to her skivvies. Now, you know, I don't think that's probably the best way to introduce one of the female characters is to have, you know, them in their underwear, but
you know, I wasn't arguing. I was just like, all right, I'm in. I'm sold. Go.
Absolutely not. I mean, it was set in the 60s, and that's what women did then, so I'm okay with that. And that's what women do now, as far as I'm concerned. But.
And I wouldn't say that every actress – I don't think you did say every actress was bad, because the one that I really like was Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique. She's actually going to be heading this big new Hunger Games franchise based on the books, and she's up and coming. I thought she did a great job with that. Mm-hmm. But,
Yeah.
And they did kind of comment on the way that women were treated back then. Remember the scene between Sebastian Shaw and Emma Frost?
Yeah.
But, okay. So anyway, that was kind of a mainstream look. And to get kind of farther into it with comic book continuity and all that, what do you guys think? Were you annoyed when something conflicted with one of the other movies, or did you not give a shit?
Well, honestly, I couldn't really find much. I mean, you guys probably could, but I couldn't find much that really conflicted with the other movies other than the Xavier Mystique relationship. Mm-hmm. And in that, I mean, you know, I thought maybe they would, I don't know. I mean, that was never referenced again, really, to be like pretty much his sister. But other than that, I mean, I couldn't really find much that would, that conflicted with the movie. As a matter of fact, it looked like they were trying to really stay in the same continuity. Actually, the first thing I noticed was in the opening scene. It was the same opening scene as the first movie, which was, you know, the concentration camps and that sort of stuff. But I immediately realized that they had refilmed it for some reason. Of course, later I figured out they needed that kid as an actor to do other stuff. But I mean, it seemed more like they were really trying to stick to the original continuity.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, we will be talking about the ending now, so we're putting up the spoiler warning. We'll tell you when to go back to, if you check out the website where you can start listening to the show again if you don't want to get spoiled. What did you guys think of the ending as far as that goes? I mean, I'm thinking of basically about how the missiles were all coming from the Russians and the Americans, and all the mutants are on the beach, and all of a sudden Magneto looks pretty damn right about humanity, right?
Yeah.
let's all nuke them in one shot.
It's the only way to be sure.
Now, you know, his solution might be genocide, which, I think he's getting to that point in the next movie, if there is a next movie.
Right.
But that was really nuanced, you know. I like it, like I said earlier, when the characters are sympathetic, even the bad guys.
So. Sure, yeah. I was a fan. I thought it worked out pretty well. I was just happy that Michael Ironside was there. So, you know, at that point, anything could have happened and I'd have been okay. What do you think, Dave?
I'm thinking that by the end of that movie, I was more wrapped up in the storyline than I was in the action. And that's a nice place to be at the end of a comic movie.
Yeah, definitely.
So, although he was tearing things apart and saving the day, and I got to say, I really liked the choice to make Magneto the outcast Wolverine-ish type character who's having to come in and fulfill a role without really wanting to. So while he was saving the day, you knew he was going to turn bad. But at the same time, he was really just one evil versus another. And no one knew where they stood. Literally, the X-Men were standing on the sidelines watching him do all this stuff, powerless, despite all their power. And, I mean, suddenly the audience member felt like one of the people on the team. So it was a nice connection moment.
Yeah, it was definitely like a question to the audience, like, which way would you go sort of thing. So I really dug that. The turn that Magneto took actually felt a little quick to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, I knew it was going to happen eventually, but it seemed like, you know, he and Xavier were really making this connection, and, you know, it seemed like it would be hard to fake that sort of thing with a mind reader next to you.
But, sure.
You know, all of a sudden it was just like a really quick turn, and he was like, shove a coin through this dude's head, fuck the world.
Yeah, I think that they were trying to get from point A to point B, and they were like, well, this is going to be a little bit rushed at this part. Xavier and Magneto were very believable as friends, but we didn't really get to see them become friends, I thought, either.
Right.
So they had to skip over this and that. As far as the coin goes, I did not understand how it entered Sebastian Shaw's head. That might just be a little nitpick, but it's like slow motion. Yeah, the slow motion coin.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was trying to figure out whether the scene was supposedly shot in slow motion or if he like just really slowly pushed it through his brain, which would kind of be a little more morbid, but, you know.
Yeah, that's probably what happened then. Okay.
And I think the reaction to Magneto's quick change is really just a reaction to about 3/4 of the way into the movie, when, or I would even say like 2/3 of the way, it really picked up. After the scene where Xavier helped Magneto move the larger object than he thought he could move, that seemed to be an awakening point. And everything seemed to start moving exponentially fast. Like, characters started changing. The storyline started making more leaps to get towards the end of the movie. So I think they really focused on that introductory first half, which worked for me. And then the last half might have pleased some people who were like into the action.
Okay.
But
see, to me, I could watch a whole movie of Magneto traveling around the world and killing Nazi spies. Like, the beginning to me was so cool.
Yeah.
Towards the middle of it, I might have to disagree a little bit, because it did slow down with that Beast subplot. I thought the subplot with Beast kind of slowed the whole movie down.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene that Dave was just talking about was kind of making me laugh, because it was a big training montage, like, right in the middle.
Favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, as soon as Xavier was like, we have to train, I looked at the guy next to me and I said, montage.
And it was.
But
was a good montage, because he talked over it, so it wasn't just music in action.
Yeah, it wasn't like a Rocky montage, but yeah, it was. But, you know, we're talking about a movie set back then, so fuck it. Why not have a montage? I mean, you got a whole team. You gotta suddenly evolve into this super team, so why not? Another one of the things I wanted to bring up was a couple of the characters. Now, I mean, I don't recall a Darwin character. I don't recall this Azazel character, which, by the way, was the name of the demon from Fallen that I watched earlier. But anyway.
For the record, they're both comic book characters as well.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just some of those I don't recall, but at the same time, I don't think I read much of the what were they called? The Hellfire Club.
Oh, there you go.
I don't think I really read a lot of the Hellfire Club, so I wasn't 100% on that, but yeah, I mean, as far as all the characters went, I mean, it seemed really, really awesome. Other than, I gotta say, the Emma Frost turning to diamond thing.
Yeah.
Like, all of her clothes turned to diamond too, which I thought was odd. And then we got Magneto like cracking her diamond neck. I was like, this is strange. What's happening?
Yeah. Well, you know, you could say the same thing about Mystique and the clothes, and you know, that's kind of micro, but I can see what you mean.
Yeah.
Two things I want to say about that was one, Azazel. I had never pictured, and I've been on playgrounds when I was little, picturing Nightcrawler's powers. Right. He's my favorite superhero. I love Nightcrawler. And when Azazel was on the screen and he's picking people up and
just dropping the shit out of them.
That is so awesome, man. Yeah. Evil Nightcrawler. Oliver Splat, man. I love that part.
That was awesome.
Yeah. What baffles me a little bit after having watched that and thinking back, actually, I wasn't even thinking back. The next day I came home and they had the first of the X-Men, the trilogy, I guess it would be, not counting the Wolverine Origins movie. They had those running on TV. So I sat down, did some work there in the background. I looked over and this was one scene in X-Men 2 where Nightcrawler is looking at Mystique and he says, "Why don't you just look like everyone?" And she says in his voice, "Because we shouldn't have to," or something like that.
Yeah.
And then she walks away and he's giving her this like kind of like longing, affectionate, that was kind of hot look. Uh-huh. And then I realized Mystique and Azazel had a kid.
Yep.
And it was Nightcrawler. And there he is looking at his mom like, "I want to do you." That shit is mutant incest. That's what causes mutation. Didn't they hear the lecture that Magneto gave or Xavier gave?
Those mutants, they just hump anything that move.
Well, apparently Mystique does, and I'm okay with that.
Didn't Rebecca Romijn Stamos make a cameo?
Yes, a very brief blink if you miss it cameo where Mystique changed her form to become her.
Yeah.
Older version.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of interesting. That's kind of fun.
Me too. And we haven't mentioned the cameo by Wolverine that we mentioned it earlier in the news section, but I love that.
Yeah.
That was fucking perfect, man.
It really was.
Wolverine was in it? How did I miss that?
It's one of those things where it's like they hid that so well from any of the trailers or any of the news items. And when it happened, it was like the whole theater just erupted that I was in. It was really, really cool. So, yeah, I was a big, big fan of that cameo. That was fun.
I mean, there's no other way that I would want Magneto to be killed. So I'm glad they had that in the movie.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself. Amazing. Amazing.
Did you say Magneto be killed?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Because the people don't know. They might not have seen it. And they're sitting here listening. Hey, you know, Wolverine just popped up and had sex with Moira McTaggart. Who knows? Who knows?
I think you're right.
Keep you guessing.
That didn't happen, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the spoiler section, but okay. So anything else you want to say about it before we move on? I wanted to say that I thought that it was awesome the way that embraced like this James Bond type of sexiness and also embraced its comic book roots. And, you know, it had a Holocaust revenge story. It had so many different things going on, the JFK stuff. I mean, I guess you could say it was kind of all over the place, but to me it was just like, wow, why don't we just throw as many things in there as we can? And it's still awesome. So.
But, and that usually doesn't work. So.
Yeah, it usually doesn't, because usually it's so disconjointed, but this seemed to all really just flow pretty nicely. I was a big fan. Yeah, I was happy with it.
Okay. Super 8.
Delicious.
Okay. We all liked X-Men. We'll find out if we all like Super 8. Who wants to run that one down?
Super 8 was it's really all about I guess this kind of took place in like the late 70s, early 80s, where
1979 was the setting.
79. Well, it was a group of kids who pretty much just kind of run around their town and film movies. There's this one kid in particular who's kind of the director kid, but everyone has a job. They're lighting and the makeup, whatnot. Anyway, it all comes down to they're shooting this zombie film. A train shows up in the background. They decide to use that as production value, as actually said in the movie. The whole thing derails from someone on the train tracks, and then a monster movie kind of breaks out around it.
And let me interrupt you real quick. Do you think – I was thinking we probably shouldn't mention the nature of the monster.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, because, you know, that's part of the fun, going to the movie and seeing it yourself. So. All right.
And, you know, the movie actually plays with that because they don't show you much, you know, until the very, very end, which we won't get too far into. But it all really comes down to this group of kids and their adventure and – you know, that the monster revolves around, all these crazy things are happening around the town. There's also some interpersonal relationships that form between some of the characters and some of the, you know, some of the kids and some of the kids' parents. But overall, it's just a big kind of romp, sci-fi romp with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's almost as if the sci-fi aspect was secondary
right.
to the story of this one boy who had lost his mother and is falling in love and has a strange Absolutely. Relationship with his dad.
Absolutely. This is definitely a story of growing up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just happens to also involve a big threat to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, one part I enjoyed was that it was set in 1979, so I got to look at the vintage stuff from that era,
mm-hmm.
and be reminded, even though I wasn't born back then, be reminded of certain things from my childhood.
Sure.
What do you think?
Go for it, Dave.
What do I think? I think I'm glad I watched it. Will I watch it again? I don't think so.
Really?
While it was a great movie for a one-time experience, but the replay value on that one's going to be rather low unless for some reason you were also in a train crash monster incident. because while the acting was spot on, the story was excellently done, and the cinematography breathtaking, I didn't really see anything to return to after having watched it.
The irony is the part I was looking forward to the most was the monster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the buildup to the monster and the mystery involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to agree with Dave in the third act, even though I think I enjoyed watching the whole thing, I came out of the theater feeling a little empty, like
mm-hmm.
that was it.
Right.
Well, that's the problem with a good mystery movie. When you can see the end of the mystery, you're no longer really into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like in some of the other movies that he's done, where you don't see what's happening until like probably the last 5 minutes, this you had a good 40 minutes where you kind of had that particular mystery solved and you didn't know what else to be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They made the mystery so central to it that you lost sight that it was about the people.
Right. And the he being J.J. Abrams, who wrote and directed it, and I've seen a lot of his TV shows and movies, and he's better at the situation, the setup, the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Than
the execution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually went into this film with really high expectations. This was the one I was really excited about this year. And while I do have to kind of agree with you a little bit that it was not what I was really hoping it would be, I couldn't really find anything that I had any real troubles with. Especially, to me, I know you guys were all about the monster stuff. I was actually much more interested in the group of kids and what they were doing, because I think I may have mentioned this on a couple episodes ago, that the trailer kind of gave me this feeling of like a cross between E.T. and the Goonies.
Yeah.
And to me, the Goonies was all about this group of kids. And yeah, they were doing these crazy things, hunting for pirate treasure or whatnot, but it was all the stuff that happened with them. And that's what I was really interested in this film, between Joe, the main character, and Alice, the main female, the director kid, the kid that just randomly vomits everywhere, the kid that lets to blow shit up. You know what I'm saying?
Pyromaniac.
So yeah, it was all of the stuff that kind of centered around them that I was really interested in. And once, later in the movie, I'm not really spoiling anything, but later in the movie, there's the group kind of disbands a little bit. They got to kind of run off and do separate things. And that was the point where I looked at it and was a little disappointed, because yeah. I was like, it's the fact that all these guys are together doing, having their own characters. And,
oh my God, that solves it. That would have made it such a better movie.
Yeah, I really agree. I mean, if they were all still together doing all this stuff together with their own skill sets or whatnot, I think it would have been a much better film. Even though I think what J.J. Abrams was really trying to do was push the relationship between Alice and Joe.
Yeah.
And, the parents involved there. But, other than that, I was a big, big fan.
Who is one of the Fanning girls, Alice. And during the beginning of the movie, she shows off her acting chops.
yeah, she really
during
does.
During the zombie, acting for the movie within the movie. And that was a lot of fun seeing all the boys, the characters, be like, wow, I'm amazed.
Yeah, just blown away. I think some of my favorite scenes were where they were filming this movie that's called The Case, and it's just a zombie movie, and they're using all of the all of the insanity in the town, the train wreckage and military officials running everywhere. They're using that stuff as background for their movie to push that realism, and I just thought that was genius. I really thought that was really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That was some of my favorite stuff.
Dave, you got anything else you want to say?
I'm actually having a hard time thinking of anything to say more about the movie. It's aside from encouraging people to watch it, I don't find much to comment about. Nothing wrong, but nothing necessarily overly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want to spoil it for anybody that even asked me what it's about, because that's the appealing part. It's fun to see what it is all about. But Jesse perfectly solved the problem with the third act. The main characters were not together. I'm not going to go into spoilers, but I might be a little vague here. Certain character gets arrested. Certain character gets kidnapped. It just seemed like they're kind of like placeholders until they could get back to where they had time to fit that character in.
There was one that just stayed behind, and I was just like, that kind of kills it for me.
That's because other characters had to talk to him to find out where they would be next.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. So that just kind of bugged me, because I mean, we got this character that I'm trying to get to know, and you know, I'm gonna see what he's gonna do next. But instead, he's just sitting back playing some game, you know, away from all the action, and that just kind of bugged me.
Yeah, I think I'll rewatch E.T. or The Goonies to get that part of what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But the whole cast was great, like Jesse said, and personally, it is awesome to see a movie that stars people I don't know. You know, I don't know this actor from another movie, so I get to. It makes me think of that character better. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
That was really refreshing. Had there been a single notable actor in there, I might have latched onto that person a little too much.
Yeah. The only one I knew was Kyle Chandler, who is the father figure of Joe, right? Mm-hmm. That's his name?
Yeah.
And I know him from Friday Night Lights. I like him a lot. But yeah. And it also had that small town feeling. I grew up in a small town. It was great to see you know, the whole community be like, what is going on? All the dogs are missing. All the machinery is missing. Yeah. So that kind of stuff is fun. But
yeah, but that wasn't very realistic, because as soon as the dogs are gone, people are like, oh, thank God we don't have to feed that thing, and now we can actually feed our kids. That's what small towns like.
Or the dog won't do a daring jump through a ball of fire or something.
Yeah. did they ever actually explain why the dogs just ran out to another town?
No, they didn't, and that's kind of what I liked about the movie. They didn't necessarily explain why the things were happening, because one would assume that it's because of the creature, and once the creature is acknowledged as existing, then you just assume, and they don't have to bother with the technicality of it.
Well, see, I mean, there's parts of that that I like, you know, when it's done a certain way, but then there's parts like this that it just makes me, you know, because that was something that was kind of in the trailer, so when I see something in the trailer, I'm like, ooh, there's a question that seems interesting, I want to know the answer, so I'll watch the movie for the answer, and I don't get it. It's not to bring up another Kevin Bacon movie, but do you guys remember? Oh shit, I just lost it. Stir of Echoes.
I haven't seen it.
All right,
yes,
well,
I remember that.
It was kind of this kind of ghost story or whatnot, and he gets like his psychic switch turned on, and he's like, he has this insane thirst through the whole movie, and he's chugging orange juice on a constant regular basis. And I'm like, that's interesting. Why is he thirsty? And they never explain it, and it was just like, ah, that just bugs me. So you know, when all the dogs are just gone, I'm like, maybe there's something to that. Maybe why? Tell me why, movie. But they never do.
So I take it you didn't like any of the Hitchhiker's Guide from the Galaxy, because it never really explains why the dolphins leave Earth?
Well, no. I mean, like, stuff like that. I mean, when it's done a certain way, like, that was just to be goofy, because the author of Hitchhiker's Guide was just a goofy fucker. So, you know, that's what the dolphins do. They said, oh, shit, it's time to bounce. So they just leave. But you know, that was kind of an inciting incident, whereas this was just – it was a – you know, God, I can't think of words.
J.J. Abrams, not a goofy fucker.
not so goofy of a fucker that I can tell. But no, I mean, all the dogs leaving were just a repercussion of something, but I don't know what that was. Like,
right, just
was,
like the electricity coming in off and flickering. And
yeah, I don't know. I mean, my dog doesn't do that.
Yet.
Awesome. Well, yeah, other than that, I mean, you know, until we get into the I definitely don't want to spoil anything for anyone, because go out and see that movie if you haven't.
And we're kind of down on it, but I still I'm glad I went to go see it. And it's just one of those strange things where, you know, I never judged it while I was watching it, because I was caught up in the story, and I didn't think there was a problem with it until I left the theater. So I don't know.
Well, did you guys happen to stay around for the credits?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I want to remind any listeners out there, when you go and watch it, please hang around for the credits, because they show what's the quote unquote finished product of the movie that they've been filming throughout this movie, and it is hilarious. It is really, really good, and it just cracks me up, man. The whole theater was standing up seeing this whole thing. I was actually in the hallway, and I came back to see this, and everyone is just cracking up over it. It's really, really good.
Yeah, that's the movie I'd watch again. Two movies for the price of one is The Way of the Future, Hollywood. Start that shit.
Oh,
it's The Way
man,
of the Future.
Bring it back the double feature.
It reminds me of a certain movie that we made when we were in high school.
Yeah.
We can have flashbacks.
Dude, we should reboot The Infamous.
I'm not getting in the trunk again.
Oh.
Who am I kidding? Yes, I am.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, yeah, it was a good trip down nostalgia lane, but there was just something lacking from the movie. I'm not sure. But
I would give it definitely like 4 3/4 like model trains. So, definitely.
Or weird Rubik's
Cube. And what would be your rating for X-Men?
Oh, I'd say my rating for X-Men was like, I don't know. I'd say a good solid 4 German coins through the head of Kevin Bacon.
All right. Okay, well, I think we are done with the show tonight. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. We really appreciate the small listenership that we have kicking and asking us questions and wanting to be part of the show. We love that. Anything else to say before we head on out?
That's it for me.
Right. Love everybody.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Jesse has a few more things to say about where you can find us. And please write us an iTunes review. All right. Bye.
Hey guys, just a quick reminder that if any of you would like to be on the show, suggest topics for the show, or just have questions or comments, please let us know at squarepegshow@gmail.com or on our website, squarepegshow.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to us on iTunes. So until next time, guys, be square.